From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Robert Siegel. A Beautiful Mind, Sylvia Nasser's biography of John Nash, told the story of a brilliant young mathematician who suffered from schizophrenia. John Nash wandered the Princeton campus for years and then won the 1994 Nobel Prize in Economics for work he had done years earlier and recovered sufficiently to resume his work. Now, Nash's story is on the screen in Ron Howard's film adaptation of A Beautiful Mind. As Nash, Russell Crowe turns in a tour de force, playing him at many ages, starting as a graduate student in his 20s.
I cannot waste time with these classes and these books. Memorizing the weak assumptions of lesser mortals. I need to look through to the governing dynamics. Find a truly original idea. That's the only way I'll ever distinguish myself.
Later, Crowe plays Nash in his 70s, receiving his Nobel Prize. The acting challenge to Russell Crowe is dwarfed by the subjects that this movie tackles. Director Ron Howard talked with us about making a movie about mathematics, economics, genius, and mental illness.
The challenge here was to try to make it accessible. It's not meant to be a biopic or a docudrama, but I thought this was sort of what was remarkable ultimately about the story is that, yes, it follows the life of a very unusual individual. His line of pursuit is beyond most of us, and of course what he has to deal with is outside the normal experience. However, I felt that there was an opportunity for us to ultimately connect on a very human, relatable level with this unusual character, because if ultimately what you wind up sort of understanding is that we're a lot more alike than we are different.
But you had to somehow negotiate this idea that John Nash was a brilliant young mathematician, and as a filmmaker you can either do that by having lots of people say, John Nash, you're a brilliant mathematician, or in some way try to communicate the substance of that, knowing that no one in the theater, with a couple of very rare exceptions, will grasp what's being said at that moment.
Well, that requires a couple of things. But first, you have to find an actor who can honestly present that. There's no camera lens that lends intelligence. You can't light for it. It's not a matter of standing in the right place at the right time and just saying the words. You need to see something in the eyes. And when I first met with Russell Crowe, it was a sort of an ambitious, aggressive intellect that I could discern right away that made me believe that he was absolutely the right one to play the role. This is a very, very challenging role for Russell, and for me as a director, it's the most complex character that I've ever been involved with. And one of the really exciting aspects of this story is that there were no pat or obvious choices.
There were choices, though, that you made about the life of John Nash, about what would be in and what would be out. Mm-hmm. I assume you made them. Mm-hmm. In Sylvia Nasser's book, she wrote about, for example, the morals charge, the bust in a men's room sting operation in Santa Monica that cost Nash's security clearance when he was working at Rand, child he fathered before he got married, rougher edges of his personality. Did you decide they just couldn't fit into the movie? It would complicate him, make him too unsympathetic in some ways, or what?
What we were concerned about was just getting it to fit. And we weren't really that interested in telling the story of John Nash. In simplifying it and creating a movie story, the story became genius, madness, recovery, acknowledgement. Within the framework of the story we chose to tell, the elements of his life that we reflected, even though much has been fictionalized, simplified, even made symbols of, that I think hopefully through all that we've captured the spirit of his life in an authentic way.
John Nash, who was a brilliant young graduate student and then mathematician elsewhere, then suffered from schizophrenia terribly and walked around the Princeton campus for years.
They called him the Phantom of Fine Hall.
Phantom of Fine Hall.
Yes.
Is then awarded the Nobel Prize for his Nash Equilibrium in 1994. He's still alive.
Yes.
Still goes to the office at Princeton.
Still doing research.
How helpful was he to you in making the movie?
John was not particularly forthcoming. I think he tried his best. He speaks in a rather elusive kind of way, in fact, sort of circuitous. And at first I wondered if he was, you know, very fragile and not quite understanding what we were talking about. And as I've come to know John, I realize that he's highly functional and understands quite well what everyone is saying and, in fact, what he's expressing.
Did Nash meet with Russell Crowe?
I kept the two of them apart all through pre-production. Russell asked about meeting Nash a couple of times. Scheduling never quite worked. I was always kind of happy about that because I really didn't want Russell to feel compelled to do an imitation of John Nash. But the first or second day that we were filming at Princeton, Nash, the real Nash, just uninvited, showed up. And at first I thought, how do I handle this one? And said hello to John, kind of kept him over by the coffee, went over to Russell, and I said, well, John's here. By that time, we'd been through the whole rehearsal process and a day or two of filming, and Russell said, that's cool. I'd love to meet him. And they sat down, and it was, I'll never forget it. It was fascinating. I mean, here was a sort of the young Nash with the senior Nash. Mm-hmm. Because at that point, Russell was playing the sort of 23-year-old Nash. And it was great. They had a wonderful conversation. I listened in from time to time. And in fact, Russell plucked a few moments out of their interaction that he then sort of reinvented and improvised into the last part of the movie when he was playing Nash as an older man.
Now, I want to ask you, a friend who also has seen a screening of A Beautiful Mind made this critical comment to me. He said, you know, it's very, very good. It's very impressive. But in the end, a Hollywood movie, quote unquote, must make schizophrenia somehow easier, with a happier ending, nicer colors, sweeter, conquerable by love, rather than a movie in which it's an awful sickness and it's pain and it lingers and it still destroys. Mm. You plead not guilty to that?
Well, I mean, I think that the movie does depict the disease as a horrifying one. Mm-hmm. I think that Nash's experience is hellish. And I do think that in telling a movie story, one of the things that draws us to Nash's story is that it is ultimately triumphant. It's a bittersweet triumph because Nash will tell you that he's still plagued, but a line that's in the movie that's taken directly from Nash is that he characterizes his dealing with it as a kind of a diet of the mind.
But if Nash indeed, after winning the Nobel Prize, had jumped out of a window in some vision, you wouldn't have made a movie about that.
Might not have. It's possible that we wouldn't have. So I think the movie does offer hope. And to that, I plead guilty.
Ron Howard, thank you very much for talking with us today.
I've enjoyed it.
Ron Howard, director of A Beautiful Mind.